Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share an empowering hour. And I can promise you that many of you will hear things that are going to put everything into a better frame of reference today. You'll see what I'm talking about once we complete our health nutrition segment, but we always begin with the latest on health and healing. This comes from Quebec's Laval University, and something simple. It's blueberries. They found that blueberry extract could help fight gum disease and reduce antibiotic use. Now, we know that gum disease is a common condition among adults. It occurs when bacteria forms biofilms or plaques on your teeth, and consequently, the gums become inflamed. Some severe cases, called a periodontal advanced condition, call for antibiotics. But now scientists have discovered that wild blueberry extract could help prevent dental plaque formation. And this was published in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry. And that could lead to new therapies for gingivitis and periodontal conditions and reduce the need for antibiotics. And that's good. A new study from the University of Minnesota talks about a vitamin that can transform natural killer cells into a cancer therapy. And they believe it's here. What do I mean? Cancer patients appear to benefit from natural killer cells obtained from donors in an experimental method of treating cancer that involved an aggressive army of immune system fighters endowed with the ability to hone in on malignant cells and kill them, destroy them. The natural killer cells were pre-treated with nicotinamide, a compound widely known, and I've talked about many, many times, like NAD, and it's also from niacin, or vitamin B3. It's a substance with a special affinity for natural killer cells, enhancing their capacity to annihilate cancers. Once primed in the laboratory, these natural killer cells are able to be unleashed against formidable targets. The evolving methodology has shown promise in a preliminary study aimed at forcing hard-to-treat cancers of the blood into remission. Now, in a unique take on this emerging form of cancer treatment, medical scientists in the Division of Hematology and Oncology and Transplantation at the University of Minnesota have devised a way to boost, enhance, supercharge the effectiveness of natural killer cells, hence enhancing their role in killing cancer cells. The innovative approach boosted the impact of natural cancer killer cells and brought about remissions in patients with otherwise recalcitrant cancers. So this is really good news. So the nicotinamide helps the body turn food into energy and is chemically part of the coenzymes NAD plus and ADH, which are critical in oxidation reduction reactions throughout the body. Quite simply, they help the body produce what is called adenosine triphosphate, or ATP, which fuels cellular metabolic process. It's the fuel of your cell. And I think this is very important. So, we know it helps with the aging process. Now we know it helps fight cancer. Also, we knew this. We didn't need this study, but it reinforces what we already have been in focus on, and that is living in a disadvantaged neighborhood affects food choices and hence weight gain and the microstructure of the brain. This in the University of California at Los Angeles, published in Communications Medicine. We all know that you are what you eat, according to the adage. But it's not just the body that's impacted. According to the research in UCLA, David Geffen School of Medicine, living in a disadvantaged neighborhood can affect your food choices, weight gain, and even the microstructure of the brain. And it finds poor quality of available foods. You don't have your high-end food markets. You don't have the fresh food markets. You might have, in some cases, a farmer's market, But those are mainly like in New York City. You don't see them in the poor neighborhoods. You see them down at Union Square. You see them on the Upper West Side, outside of the Museum of Natural History on Columbus Avenue. You see them in a few neighborhoods, but you don't see them where they're needed most, where people have the least amount of money to dispose of with food. And as a result, they tend to buy food that is inexpensive, but no good for them. Fast food, the hamburger meal. You get hamburgers, a cola, and a let's say French fries for about, you can get it for under $5. Okay, what do you get in the health food store for $5? Not a lot. So we should pay attention to this, and we should have not just community efforts, but council efforts, mayor efforts, governor efforts to bring healthy food to the poorest communities, and then have within every poor community, there are blocks that are designated uninhabitable. Fine, level them, and then put community gardens and put classes there where people can go and learn how to grow things, and then have it open to the whole community. Now, this can be done. It has been done. It is being done, but not in the poorer communities, with some rare exception. I saw one in Detroit, saw one over out of Chicago, but we need these by the thousands. So bring healthy fruits and vegetables, legumes and beans and squash, tubers, garlic and onion. You can grow all this in a community garden. So just suggestion. And that will help people lose weight. And also we should have free classes on health sponsored by the Surgeon General, where they don't go, and they will, trust me, they will absolutely go to the very providers of the worst foods and ask their so-called nutritionists to guide this. No, you need independent nutritionists who are not affiliated with any income from the big food companies to be able to go in there and teach the classes on how to get healthy and a new diet. Now, if anyone would like information on that, if any community leaders or people who would work with community leaders, I'll be more than willing to share insights and information and whole programs that I've created. In fact, I created a whole program to rehabilitate a whole block in Camden, New Jersey. And I asked the people, what is the worst block in the whole town? That they laughed and said, almost all the blocks, and that they were not far off. So they gave me one block that was uninhabited, and everything was broken down and falling down and had to be bulldozed. They didn't have that many bulldozers. And I said, give me this block, and out of my pocket and time, I will get all the people in this community, and we will rebuild this as an ideal block. And by showing that it works, and we can help people get off drugs, we can help people who need assisted living, we can help people who need help with health problems, put up a clinic, we can have crafts center, we can have a community garden. And they said no. So, okay. Man, that was a surprise. But the project itself, I still have. So we're heard all over the world. So if you're a community leader, if you'd like to know how to do this, it's not expensive. And you can include everyone in the community who wants to do it. In fact, better to have everyone in the community than outsiders. Because if they're coming in, they're only coming in to make money. And it's not about making money, about making more healthy choices. From Shanghai Tong University School of Medicine, vitamin B6 reduces adverse H. pylori treatment reactions. So findings from a randomized controlled trial published in the British Medical Journal Infectious Disease shows that vitamin B6 could help decrease adverse reactions associated with the quadruple anti-helicobacter treatment regimen, which I do not support to begin with. And this is mainly because they've been misdiagnosing the actual underlying cause of ulcers for a long time. And we found that it's really a bacteria, and we found that you can kill this off by using probiotics, vitamin C intravenous, and a better alkalized diet. So there's many different ways. They're using just drugs, three main drugs. But even they say by using the standard treatment but adding in vitamin B6, it reduces all the side effects. Young women can bank exercise for better heart health. University of Queensland, which is in Australia, they found that women can retain the benefits of exercise during their 20s, going on to have better health in their later life. So the more you exercise when you're younger, and this longitudinal data study showed that that'll benefit you when you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. So it really is important that we get everyone out exercising. 10,000 steps a day minimally, ideally 20,000, because then you're really getting yourself into shape. You're going to have less obesity, less diabetes, less heart disease, less cancer, less depression, more vitality, more flexibility, more endurance, more stamina, more strength. What a wonderful trade-off. Disease for health, weakness for strength. And it costs you nothing, but it saves you a lot. And this was published in the Journal of Physical Activity and Health. So remember this, you're lowering your heart rate, you're lowering your fat rate, you're lowering your blood pressure, you're lowering your glucose just by getting out there and exercising. And one other thing, according to the Menopausal Society, early ovary removals is likely to accelerate the aging process and cause a lot of health problems. A new study identified specific chronic medical conditions such as asthma and arthritis associated with that procedure. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Menopause. And by the way, hysterectomy is the second most frequently performed surgical operation for women after cesarean delivery. Historically, about 23% of women 40 to 44 and 45% of women 45 to 59 have undergone this procedure at the time of hysterectomy for the prevention of subsequent ovarian cancer. But here's the issue. Why not have a whole national program that we have all the answers to on how to prevent ovarian cancer to begin with? But that's not where the money is, and that's not where the drug companies benefit, and that's not where the scare tactics occur. But you can prevent ovarian cancer, and therefore you don't need the hysterectomy. And therefore, you lessen the likelihood of premature aging and all the medical complications that come with it. Prevention, unfortunately, let's just be honest. There's no money in prevention. And as a result, we make it a non-issue when it should be the issue. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come right back. We have a lot to share, and I think you're going to find today's program particularly interesting for those of you who are A, more critical thinkers, B, you want to know the underlying cause of social problems, not just the symptoms that we see every day. You don't need a tourist guide to show what's happened on those levels. So I think you'll appreciate the level of scholarship that we're going to share with you. Back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I don't care what your political persuasion or your ethnicity or your age, all of us can be realistic about how many problems we have that are going unresolved. We're given promises, we trust people, we put them in power, and then we're betrayed. Doesn't matter whether it's left or right. So yesterday I was thinking about this and came up with this short commentary followed by a whole series of commentaries on critical race theory, cancel culture, wokeism, identity politics, all of this, which is happening now and given an enormous amount of attention, even being enacted into laws in countries like Canada, Great Britain, Australia, New Zealand, and in certain parts in the United States. Where is this leading? Who's behind it? How do we get here? With all the brilliant people, with all the people who may not have a formal education but have a lot of understanding of life, common sense and reason, why don't we have any positive solutions? The title of this commentary is The Social Terrorism of the Intellectual Killing Fields. The balkanization of the U.S. by warring ideological divisions has expended virtually all of our energies that could have been constructively used to bring unity, to bring solutions. Isn't it best to sit down and discuss differences and then discuss what we can share in common, keep our differences to the aside? If we have a major problem that's going to impact everyone on the planet, shouldn't we use all of our collective input constructively to deal with these issues? We face numerous crises, including public health issues, education, destruction of the environment, food insecurity, inflation, etc. Instead, the nation's deficit of clear attention has been focused on social sundries that, if the preservation of Western civilization and humanity itself were dependent upon racial, ethnic, and gender identities, then we have no other solutions. That all of our focus should be on these three topics. But should they? For example, the very idea that every white person on the planet is born a white privileged racist, entitled, is a violation of psychological insanity. Yet a significant mass of Americans believe it. How did that happen? It's called conditioning and propaganda and surrendering free will to critical think. The Second World War should have taught us that no one has the right to determine genetic superiority or genetic inferiority. How many people had to die? Over 27 million Russians, 7 million Jews, plus gypsies and communists and artists and others. And that's just in Germany. And how many German soldiers? How many families were torn apart, all because of the obvious sociopathic insanity of one individual who then surrounded themselves with people who then believed in the same concept? These are mental constructs used solely for political, social, and ideological ends. The new rules are being written by a very small group of racial hustlers who are determined to define the standards of national identity and policy through identity of the color of your skin, or your political beliefs, or who you voted for, or who you support, or what classes you're willing to teach or learn from, and how you're willing to turn your children over to the body politic of the consortium of ideologies within the school system. And it seems they are so far succeeding. And this is only because the vast majority of people on this planet have remained silent. But not for long. Because people now have no fear of bringing their agendas front and center. Klaus Schwab showed last week in a talk that he was disappointed that too many Americans were not getting in line and following the consensus, the herd, into their control. The head of BlackRock, and you will hear this directly from their mouths on tomorrow's show, the most powerful person on the planet, more powerful than the President of the United States by far. His company, BlackRock, bring in Vanguard and State Street. They control everything. They control the leading shares and thousands of corporations. So you think, well, they don't control the New York Times. Yes, they do. They don't control the Washington Post. Oh, they absolutely do. They don't control NPR. They don't control the nation. They don't surely don't control Mother Jones. Look again. Which of these publications, which of the people who used to write honestly for these publications have said it's a crime against all honest journalism to attack and try to incarcerate for life Julian Assange or Chelsea Manning or Drake or any of the others that they have tarred, feathered, and imprisoned or destroyed their reputations? When was the last time that the New York Times invited Chris Hedges, one of our most brilliant, honest, independent-thinking persons, to share an article? And they get it both ways. They take people that have outstanding reputations, like Abby Martin. Now, Abby's been to the killing fields in Israel. She has been in the homes of those who suffer and have been deprived, who believe that they are living as an apartheid state. When was the last time she was invited to debate those issues anywhere? And the answer is never. Or Matt Taibbi, or one of the world's, if not the world's leading feminists for the past 15 years. Why was she denied a forum on the historical left and liberal platforms where she was the go-to person on all issues of women's health? But she was denied that, and others as well. So where do they go? They go to a Tucker Carlson. And that gives the left then an opportunity to say, see, they're just Republicans in disguise. They're fascist. No. They were the last honest journalists left in the United States. And I could say the same in France. I could say the same in Italy and England and Scotland and Ireland about the journalists there who once were respected and who today are deplatformed and erased and destroyed. So what we have today is we have problems without solutions, because the solutions we do have that would work, we are denying the virtue in the solution by destroying the person advocating it. Naomi Wolf doesn't have a forum today that she once had, where her ideas could be accelerated to positive solutions. So today the archetype of racism is, irony of ironies, the anti-racist. The ultimate anti-fascists are exemplary fascists. If you're a traditional feminist and disagree with men, the alchemically transmuting into biological women, you are, quote, a trans-exclusionary radical feminist, or TERF, a derogatory name used to dehumanize any woman who disagrees with the new gender ideology, including leading feminists, leading lesbians. So now the lesbian community who choose to be sexually attracted and share their energies with other women are now considered not women. Why? How did this happen? But it has. And where are the women's groups standing up for them? Where are they? Why aren't they speaking out? These post-modern incarnations of the Weimar Republic's German Social Democratic Youth Corps have a limited knowledge of history, are completely diminished when it comes to deep intellectual thought, and have zero compassion for humanistic psychological understandings. In demonstrations across the United States and Europe, protesters robotically wave or dress and scream and slather at the mouth and hurl fists in the air in the flag of Ukraine, evidently unknowingly, because the Eastern European nation, aside from being the most corrupt nation on the planet, where virtually all the money that we send them is stolen, and so much so that when it was proposed, why don't we have an inspector general to review how our money is spent? Reasonable? No. Every Democratic voted it down. Why? Why don't you want to know if what's happening in Ukraine also happened in Afghanistan, also happened in Iraq? But there again, you didn't want to know where it went and held no one accountable. No. And have you taken a look since the 1930s fighting the rise of fascism? Today, it is preferable to blindfold ourselves and pretend it doesn't exist. Any reasonable person, and especially every woman who has been attacked and dehumanized, should be given the opportunity to bring that to the public attention. When was the last time you saw any major media provide a forum for all the women, young girls, infants, toddlers, and babies, senior citizens who were injured by the vaccine or died because of it? Not once. Do they not exist? If not giving them a forum means they're invisible, therefore there were no side effects, no deaths? No, there was a tsunami of suffering. But not a word can be said against the official position. And that's unfortunate. Thus, what we have today is we have people in positions of power on the public forums committing a guilty verdict to any human being, no matter what their background, no matter what their contributions to society, if they do not court, obey, sublimate themselves completely to the public opinion controlled by social media. Thus, a small and very vocal segment has morphed into a self-centered pathology with only one intention, to destroy people's reputations, no matter what their contributions, before being given an opportunity to say, hold on a second, aren't I supposed to be innocent until proven guilty? Not today. You're guilty without any opportunity to prove yourself innocent, even if in a court of law you prove yourself innocent. One example today, well, look at Kevin Spacey, found innocent in the United States in a major trial where they threw everything they could against him, months of preparation, and he won. Then in Great Britain, he was guilty, guilty, guilty. Oh, until the 12 jurors found him innocent of all charges. So now he is proven, after bankrupting himself, being humiliated, and being destroyed, he was innocent. So shouldn't that same society, the Hollywood and Entertainment Society, allow him back in? But they won't. So look at the hypocrisy. Well, if you're innocent, you have nothing to fear. Really? Our prisons are filled with people who are innocent. The Innocent Project has demonstrated that multiple times. Why aren't they out? And how many were put in jail because a woman yelled rape and it turns out it wasn't true? What have we done to protect their rights? How about nothing? As a result, when you are criticized by anyone within the woke cancel culture, your reputation is destroyed, no matter what you have done. Consequently, the social advocacy that was spurred by important movements for those who have been exploited is now being exploited itself by others to serve a tool for social control. And this was later adopted by the latter woke social movements such as Black Lives Matter, Antifa, and more recently the LGBTQ plus and trans movements. Now, I support gay rights. I support trans rights. I do not support surgical or any form of medical alteration in a young person's body without full knowledge of the consequences, and that is not being given. Without question, all women have a right to be heard. But then look at those who are part of the ideological movement who will not bear another person's voice, will not allow a single word of truth. It's just yelling, screaming, demeaning, and demanding. But by no means does that infer that all women should be believed under all circumstances as truthful. Yet that's what we're told. If we belong to a movement, our movement is right about everything, and everyone in the movement is right about everything, and you have no right to challenge or question it. So should we say that every woman in power should be believed unequivocally, such as Hillary Clinton, Victoria Nuland, Madeleine Albright, Margaret Thatcher, and hundreds of others I could mention, including the heads, the top women heading the seven largest military-industrial complex? Do they have only our interests at stake? Do they tell the truth all the time and never take advantage of their positions of power? Let us not be that naive. We're conditioned to be that naive. The question is, how many social movements driven by selfish individuals' desires for reaching nefarious goals gained the attention of ruling powers who were able to capitalize on such grassroots foolishness for their own ends to increase their control and power? Who is not criticized? Ever. Those in power. I'm not talking about the politicians. They're tools. They're pawns. They don't measure a rook, a king, a knight, or queen, or king status on a chessboard. And we are below that in significance. Revolutions are strategized and launched usually by small groups of individuals rather than the majority. Often they begin with a handful of radical intellectuals who compose treatises such as White Fragility, or equally as absurd, How to Be an Anarchist, or The 1619 Project, that capture the subconscious angst and anger of larger segments of society. You want someone to react in an unreasonable fashion? Stimulate that part of the reptilian brain, the subconscious. For example, without the printing press, Martin Luther could not have led the Protestant Reformation in 1517. In his 95-page treatise, tacked on the Castle Cathedral in Wittenberg, Germany, it would have been just another lonely, unread piece of parchment if it were not for the printing press to have them distributed to the masses. Today, social media is the most powerful printing press that enables radical ideas to go viral with lightning speed to millions of people. Name any topic, climate change, class struggle, immigration, pandemic, policies, war, and we find warring divisions pitting each other in this non-centralized, no safe space, and no civil dialogue arena. Gladiators fighting to the ideological death. But there's never a winner in any of these struggles at the populist level. Instead, the spoils of all conflict are reaped by the powerful that have identified the means to use the civil, hate-filled diatribes to their advantage. Then the worst of their plundered loot at the expense of the average citizen becomes codified into laws. Canada's little dictator, Justin Trudeau, is a prime example of a new Orwellian Canada, whose dystopian standards will flood over our border shortly. In fact, they already have. All discourse, or lack thereof, has moved into the virtual realm. It is for that reason that social media has become an uncontrollable bemoaneth that now transcends any humanly possible means to control. And for this reason, political, powerful individuals, intelligence agencies, corporate forces are determined to exert whatever control they can seize over what we can and cannot read or have any access in order to commander or even to commandeer what we can and cannot think and say. Say the wrong word, don't use the right pronoun, and you can be fined or even jailed. Several years ago, few people realized that companies like BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street own virtual control over nearly every commodity, financial services, transactions in our lives, everything. Minus a standing military, these private corporations are collectively far more powerful and wealthy than any developed nation. Yet this is the new reality, and people assume it is completely inconsequential. An excellent recent example has been the unimaginable ascendancy of the trans movement from a tiny percent of the American population to becoming one of the most belligerent and vocal movements today. Not all. I have met, worked with, respect, and appreciate the vast majority of adults within the trans movement. But what about the most radical voices in any movement? That is different. These are the ones who have captured much of the pride parades and the bacchanal fetish festivals, which were not common in the past. No doubt political powers noticed an opportunity to advance their social control over the public, which always works in their favor when they can keep the population divided and in hot-tempered combat by capitalizing on our collective ignorance. Consequently, woke and multi-gender agendas are being institutionalized across elementary schools, university campuses, workplaces in the military under the pretense of contributing to an all-inclusive civilized society. All-inclusive by what standard and whose text and what philosophy and what guidelines? No. No. The state cannot take the power to be the surrogate parent to indoctrinate our children without at least saying, we intend to indoctrinate your children. Your morals, your family standards, your cultural standards, your ethnic standards are irrelevant to us. We have one agenda. Control the mind till 10 years of age. We control the person for the rest of their lives. And they are correct. So for those brave parents who have stood up and just asked, why won't you allow me to read to you from this forum here at this meeting of a school board the very text that my four-year-old was allowed to read in class. You say, I can't say these words. And yet my daughter is reading these words, seeing these pornographic pictures, and you say that I'm the problem. Then you have your organization write a letter to the Attorney General, who then insists that the FBI get all the information they can and start to see if any of these people can be challenged as domestic terrorists. Since when, and we have all the evidence to prove this, since when speaking my piece, even as civilly as I can, I'm now an enemy of the state, and that's exactly how far they've gone. And what about all the professors who have the intellect but do not have the courage of character? Cowards, one and all. Because for every Brett Weinstein that gets fired as a tenured professor and his wife have to leave a campus because they've been physically threatened, and the president of the campus went along with it, how many other lesser people will say, wow, if they did that to Brett and his wife and 100 other professors who spoke out, they'll surely be able to do it to me. In fact, by the very fear that you have been allowed to be instilled in you, they've already won. And so now there's unity at the university. You don't have to teach math because people say math is racist, or language, that's racist, or any of the history of society, that's racist. And Mozart and Chopin and Tchaikovsky and all the rest of the great musicians. No, we don't have to listen to any of that. We don't have to study it. Well, what do you want to study? Anything I want or don't want. And you're going to give me an A and I'm going to graduate. Okay. And we wonder what has happened to all controls of institutional governance in a meaningful way that represents something we can all accept and live with? No. If they say yes. Yet in which functioning society has a small, radicalized minority rule over the majority while sustaining a social justice system? Oh, I can think of communist China. I can think of Russia. I can think of Pol Pot in Cambodia. Yes. What was the outcome? Show me the benefit. What is currently missing from any civil discourse in the growing wars of ideas is what we have accomplished over the decades. As a nation, we suffer from historic amnesia. It is not simply a matter of rewriting history, in which at times it does not need to be written, but can be rewritten if we find that historical facts we believed in are no longer facts we should trust. Then, fine, change that history. However, today, history is composed on a whim, a momentary flight of imagination, and for what purpose it serves at this moment. Thus, we float in the dark waters of an intellectual blackout when history books are replaced by multi-gender sexual comic books. And yet we ban Catcher in the Rye. We ban To Kill a Mockingbird. We ban 1984. Yet despite all the improvements that still need to be made to return to a functioning culture, there are the achievements that need to be resurrected in our consciousness. The decades-long struggle for civil rights was real. Women's suffrage and helping women gain the rights, real. The voting rights for Native Americans and giving them back control and sovereignty over their own lands and resources, real. A working wage, real. Ending child labor that was taking a high amount of young children, 7, 8, 9 years old and dying, and we stopped that, real. Collective bargaining through unions, real. 51% at one time. Yes. Real. We've made so many improvements, given so many people an opportunity, and yet that is all being told, well, that's not real anymore. Why not? That happened. Many of us worked in that movement. So through enormous efforts by empathetic and compassionate activities from all groups and all minorities who were denied access to basic human rights and honorable employment and achieved those opportunities, they achieved it not because it was given to them, but because these were hard-fought battles that millions of Americans participated in and others supported because it was the right thing to do. We've forgotten about the 14th Constitutional Amendment that gave blacks equal protection under the law, and the 15th Amendment gave them the right to vote, or the 1954 Supreme Court decision to ban school segregation in Eisenhower's 1957 Civil Rights Act that would federally prosecute anyone who prevented an American citizen from voting. These policies, achieved only through a great moral diligence, enriched our culture. And yet today, it's as if it never happened. In fact, these same laws are violated with impunity. Sadly, a large percentage of Americans know the truth perfectly well, but are fearful to speak it. This is why no institution is capable of reversing course to restore the riches lost. I wish we could reform all that is wrong. We can reform nothing. Rather, the alternative is that our public and private institutions in time will collapse in public disgrace. And then and only then will the majority of the Americans say, "Wow, I didn't know that. Did you want to know it? Did you spend 1 hour of a day trying to find the truth about anything? Or were you complicit by complying to everything from official dictates?" Perhaps then, when we are able to rebuild institutions that honor everyone without prejudice, without bias, then something may change for the better. I'll post this later today. We're going to take a quick break and come back. And when we come back, we'll start today, but we'll continue tomorrow. A group of essays by other individuals who have something to say about wokeness. So today and tomorrow, I have 6 different topics on wokeness, the origins of woke ideology and the origins of woke ideology, part 1 and part 2. We'll try to get both of those in today's program. And then tomorrow, wokeism, a fatal disease, and then the religion of wokeism and what to do to create a society without cancel culture, identity politics, critical race theory, and wokeism. You're not going to have anything better change unless you have the courage to stand up and face it. Let us hear from all the silent voices. Because if you don't speak, they will come when you can't speak. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Gary, do you want to go straight to the clip?
Sandy, she said his payment.
All right.
Heard the term woke, but what does it mean to be woke? Where does this come from and how does it work? It's common for groups of people to believe they're the only ones who possess the ability to see reality as it truly is. It is no different with the woke. To be woke is to be born again, to see the world anew and feel a need to awaken others to the truth. The phenomenon of wokeness has its origins both in Marxism and even more so in postmodernism. Marxists thought people had a false consciousness, which meant they couldn't see how terrible capitalism was and how it was keeping them down. Their consciousness needed to be raised, so that they could see the truth as the Marxists saw it. But then, in the 1960s, postmodernism arose. This theory brought to light a new reality. The postmodernists saw Marxism as just another fabricated narrative. That is, a false and simplistic way of seeing the world, made up by the powerful. To these French postmodern philosophers like Foucault, Derrida, and Lyotard, everything we think we know is actually a construct of power. They believed all knowledge was created and corrupted by power. Powerful forces in society decided what was and wasn't true. Then the way people spoke to each other in their everyday lives upheld the knowledge that propped up those in control. The postmodernists called this way of talking about things dominant discourses, and believed these discourses only helped those at the top. Of course, discourses do change. For example, when Christianity was a dominant discourse in society, then a gay man was considered a depraved sinner. Later, under emerging science around sex, it was believed he was suffering from a mental disorder. And when liberalism became dominant, he was a perfectly normal human being who happened to be romantically and sexually attracted to the same sex. Most of us would consider this progress. However, postmodernists were skeptical of all truth claims and disbelieved in progress. For them, everything we knew was based on stories created by those in power, and nothing could be trusted. Everything we thought we knew was suspicious and likely produced by dominant discourses to serve the powerful. Nothing was as it seemed. We were all lost in a fog created by these discourses and unable to obtain any objective knowledge about the way the world really worked. Postmodernists assured us that at least they could see through the fog and deconstruct this knowledge to reveal its flaws to the rest of us. Postmodernism is messy by nature, but we can draw two key principles from it that have remained consistent. Firstly, a postmodern knowledge principle. Obtaining objective knowledge is impossible, and everything we think of as true is actually a social construct. This means truth is manufactured to fit the needs of those in charge. Intertwined with this is the postmodern political principle. Society is set up such that invisible and oppressive power systems work through all of us. We are all partially to blame for any negative outcomes in society. These power systems produce knowledge, and that knowledge is then used to keep the powerful in place. The original postmodernism died out in the 1980s, but its key ideas were taken further by the next wave of scholars in the 1990s. These scholars created fields like postcolonial studies, queer theory, critical race theory, and intersectional feminism. They weren't happy to stand in the fog and deconstruct things. They wanted to take action and change society. They used terms like imperialism, cis-heteronormativity, patriarchy, and white supremacy to describe what they saw as the dominant discourses in society. They used the term critical consciousness to describe the ability to see these systems of oppressive power with the goal of revolutionizing them. Someone with critical consciousness could see the imperialism, white supremacy, and patriarchy in society and reveal this to the rest of us through their scholarship. Over the next 20 years, these theories developed and became more solid and concrete. They became absolute truths that were the basis for a new reformation of thought. The theories seeped out of universities and entered popular culture. Students became activists, social media allowed the spread of these ideas, and popular books like White Fragility and How to Be an Anti-Racist made them accessible to everyone. Those who adopted this new vision of the world left behind the skepticism of postmodernism. They were now enlightened, awakened to the truth, filled with certainty about the way all of society, all systems, and all interactions really worked. They could see it all. They were woke. The way that white person complimented her black colleague on good work? That wasn't just praise. It was white supremacists' surprise at a black person having intelligence and capability. The way that man is sitting, with his knees pointing outwards? This has nothing to do with the shape of men's hips and their external testes. That's patriarchal entitlement to take up more space than women and crowd them out of public areas. What about the speaker who began with, "Ladies and gentlemen, that's not a simple formal customary address. It's the erasure of non-binary people and an oppressive discourse that forces binary concepts of sex and gender onto everyone, making the world hostile to trans people and increasing their risk of violence or suicide." When one is woke and can see and feel the oppression everywhere, it becomes one's moral duty to call it all out. ban it and deplatform, punish and cancel the perpetrators. The rest of us are at best still asleep, or at worst willfully ignorant and refusing to wake up. The woke movement claims to be progressive, but its origins are more than half a century old and based on faulty and unproven scholarship. Surely we can find a better and more modern basis for understanding the social issues of our day.
Far too important to be entrusted to a group of far-left activists and zealous believers who want to radically transform society according to ideas from neo-Marxism and postmodernism. Woke ideology is a belief system that combines these lines of thought in the pursuit of liberation in place of freedom. In reality, any belief system that limits freedom of thought and open inquiry and is opposed to objectivity in the scientific method is bound to lead us away from progress, not toward it. Woke social justice ideology has turned into something like a new religious cult. It's the kind of religious cult whose beliefs are hostile to reason, disconfirmation, and disagreement of any kind.
We all have some form or another of privilege. Why does that mean we kill ourselves?
Because you have white privilege.
It is common to believe that this is actually just a minor problem, and one we are now exaggerating. After all, aren't these just radicals in the university? Why should we be concerned about this ideology? Since about 2010, this new woke religion has spread into every corner of society and started to change how we think and speak about.
We're going to be saying goodbye to our WPA audience. We're continuing to the top of the hour on PRN.live.
Many social issues. Woke social justice activists want us to reform the way we see every aspect of society, and even reality itself. Objective and rigorous standards, together with capitalism, are ultimately what it wants liberation from.
And I think it's a mistake to assume that we can combat racism by leaving capitalism in place.
Our new perspective must be based on their sacred texts. These texts, written by people like Judith Butler, Richard Delgado, Ibram X. Kendi, and many more, act like scripture for the woke believers. Their scripture tells us to trade in logic and objective knowledge for subjective lived experience. And the more oppressed a person is, the more they get to say what is true.
People who decide one day they're male, next day they're female, next day back to male, I think it's ridiculous.
That's because you're a cis straight man.
People's identities determine how they view the world according to this gospel. There is no need to resolve any contradictions that result from two conflicting lived experiences. We simply need to take it on faith that the more oppressed person has greater access to what is true.
We are not oppressed.
People of color can be operants of white supremacy if they're not checked.
This scripture is sometimes called the truth according to social justice, and you are not allowed to question it. There is one option, to believe. If you don't believe all of this scripture, that simply means you haven't fully understood it or you haven't read the text thoroughly enough. Disagreeing makes you a heretic. Speaking out against the woke worldview is blasphemy. And anyone who is white, and especially male, is born with an original sin, and that sin cannot be absolved.
You're a fucking white male!
Nobody has to save you because you're a fucking white man!
There is no redemption in this new religion, and there is no room for doubt. There is just relentless change toward a liberated future when society and the state have been perfected by woke activism. Perpetual revolution until the end of history, which you have to be on the right side of. The rigid and dogmatic beliefs that make up woke ideology will only lead us backwards to more divisiveness and toward the general decay of our society. It's already happening. It operates under the banner of social justice, but this new woke religion does not further the noble aims of the original civil rights movement. The civil rights leaders appealed to liberal values, which suggested that group identity ultimately shouldn't matter. And the movement helped us start removing barriers in society so all groups would be seen as equal. One of their most famous slogans was, "I am a man," which took the identity signifier out of the equation. The focus was on universal human rights, something that unites all of us rather than divides us. But woke social justice is obsessed with hierarchy and with who can score the most points for being the most oppressed.
Being a black gay man, you really start to see how whiteness operates even in spaces of inclusion and diversity.
It, following the model developed by Karl Marx, divides the world between the oppressor and the oppressed. And the oppressed need to rise up and fight, and even destroy the oppressor. This kind of social justice is undermining the good that the civil by its obsession with various competing identities. We should focus on higher level unifying identities, like the fact that...
Gary, you have 20 seconds left.
Because if we don't, its corrosive nature will continue to eat away at the progress we've made, much like a cancer spreading throughout society, weakening and destroying everything it comes in contact with.
Those are two parts to what will be a six-part series. Each one, each of these series has different people making different statements. You could agree or disagree. That's fine. And if civil society, we should have dialogue, civil dialogue, and debate. Be as vigorous as you want in defending your position or projecting another. But right now, we have now seen, and only because of Freedom of Information Act and lawsuits, that we have been held captive to one narrative, the woke narrative, the cancel narrative, by a small group of individuals who do not represent the majority of people and who've been protected because the deep state has played them and as a result played us. We know this because we have all the meetings that they had with the FBI and the CIA. And the CIA and the FBI and national security have gone into their domains at CNN and MSNBC, etc. A time when a real liberal, a conscientious journalist, could have a forum in the New York Times or the Washington Post. Those are all gone. And that's why you have a small handful. I was speaking with a journalist yesterday who said that she believes that we have about 25 really outstanding journalists, all liberal, who have no room on the liberal agenda to share their points of view. Their platforms have been close to them. Instead, we now know that the heads of Google and Facebook and Twitter were used to present only the official journal articles that they approved of, which served their message. And anyone who was telling the truth who opposed it was canceled, criticized, demeaned, or found guilty without trial and destroyed in the court of public opinion, which they controlled. So think of that. When you think of whether or not you have real freedom of choice on any issue begins with you having access to all the information so you can determine for yourself who is telling the truth, who's not, which information I can use and which can I not trust. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.